There are all of these, I kind of think about them as miscellaneous odds and ends and things to talk about related to being the elder of the sheep. And the lesson sheet that you have kind of goes off into some different direction. Among those directions are things like elders working with deacons, elders working with other evangelists, elders working with one another, and we're going to cover a lot of that. There are some things in there we probably won't cover. The idea of some of the doctrinal questions that you have to work your way through, there is a section later on toward the end in working to develop yourself, in which we'll talk some about some of those doctrinal questions we ought to especially pay attention to. Some scriptural things that we should spend time studying as we're getting ready to either serve in this capacity or to address the sort of questions that I think that are very common that elders have to deal with over a period of time. So some of the things we might not cover that are in this lesson sheet, we'll get to eventually regardless. But I ask you to think about this question. I think this is maybe the third class in which I had a slide ready to go. If we managed to get to it, we hadn't gotten to it before. And I tried to time it. I actually waited. When we do this material in different places, I oftentimes talk about this a little bit earlier on. But I wanted to wait until after we've gone through the case study. Because I think some of you had mentioned, and I'm not surprised, as we went through that case study, did it increase your desire, your excitement about maybe being an elder and doing that kind of work? Did it make you think, oh, if only I could have a call like that on Wednesday at 1 o'clock, right? Didn't do that. And when we've gone through some of this material before with some men here years and years ago, there was this question of, why would anybody desire this work? And yet, as you're going to see in a moment, we do have that as one of the goals of this class, that we would increase the desire, willingness to serve in that capacity. So when I got in that question years ago, I got to thinking about, well, what are the advantages? What are the blessings? Because there are some. And so I'm asking you, what do you think they are? And then I'll try to share with you, from a personal standpoint, some of the blessings I felt in serving as an elder over the years. What do you think? What might be a joy or advantage, Daniel?
I remember you saying years ago that you get a lot more prayers from the congregation on your behalf, so that was a blessing.
Yeah, I wasn't going to lead off and show you some of these things. Oh, I'm going to have to go backwards to get to this. But that is the first one, so I'll go ahead and read that. It's not quite as true now as it was when there were four elders or five elders. For a long period of time, those who were praying would pray not just for the elders, but they would pray for Marty and Paul and Russ and Sewell. And you would hear your name in prayer. And I think in just a matter of months after being appointed as an elder, I had heard more public prayers with my name than in all the 30 years as a Christian before that. That is a real blessing. And I think that we should appreciate even now, without being named specifically, but the elders being prayed about. Y'all know how often that happens, how often you pray when you lead public prayers here. And then just the thought of people on their own praying to God, remembering the elders, yeah, I think that's a big blessing.
I think you get to see the spiritual growth of individuals more than anyone else. Yeah. Even in light of the case study, I think you mentioned there was cases where you remember the forgiveness that someone displayed and being able to see that sure is a blessing.
Yeah, so for all those that have struggled and failed, and I think I tend to weigh more on where I failed to do something. I didn't come through for somebody. But on the other hand, you do watch people who have, not necessarily because of anything you personally did, you see that growth, you know you had some piece of it, and all that. It's tremendous satisfaction in that, especially in those situations maybe nobody else hardly knows about. Were you about this or something?
I'm just thinking about, you know, in that case study, you get effect on that couple, but future generations,
yeah,
you can have an effect on.
Yeah. When it works, right?
Yeah.
What else? What else do you think is the blessing, maybe, Carl?
This may sound like a theoretical answer, but I don't believe it is. Anytime you're, and I've had opportunity to be involved, not serving as an elder, but to be involved in situations with brethren and friends, very similar to the case study.
Yes.
And I always think of what Paul said to the Ephesian elders after he told them all the difficulty they were going through. He said, remember that the Lord Jesus himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive.
So there must be some blessing in it.
There's some blessing involved in just giving of yourself.
Yeah.
Whatever you have to offer in that way.
Yeah, that's a really good way of thinking of that. I may not always know exactly how it will work out that way, but it is a blessing to you.
So I was kind of thinking along a similar line, except just you know that God is pleased because he set the office up. He set the way that it should be run. And if you are with humility serving in that capacity, mm-hmm. I mean, it's something we can know. God is pleased with this service.
You know, we should take that kind of satisfaction from any kind of time in which we know that we've done what God has asked and what pleases him. But yeah, I think especially there's something intense about that sometimes as an elder.
I think one of the great blessings is as you look back and you see children that have grown up there, and certainly you can't take full responsibility because yeah. It falls on the parents, but when those children go off to school, when they marry and move off to other places, and you see their faithfulness, certainly you'd love for them to stay where they are, but when they move off, there's a great satisfaction.
Think about the usefulness that's happening somewhere else in their service. Clint?
I suspect as elders, you spend more time together than you may would have otherwise.
Yes.
And to me, that's a blessing, right?
Yeah.
You're with a brother more often.
Yeah, I'm going to mention that. I think that is a really special blessing. That's very specific to that particular office. Yeah.
I think it's a blessing just knowing that you are appointed an elder and you have the backing and support of the congregation to be in that position.
You know, I don't have that on the list, but I think that is a very meaningful thing, especially here, because the support is so strong, right? And that means a great deal to feel like that there's a trust that's been put there. But the way that this congregation continues to support you, it's not a one-time thing.
I think as an elder, you're in the public eye more, and somehow that makes you, I suppose, being held to a higher standard. I'm just saying, mm-hmm. in a practical sense, you and your family probably are subjected to a higher level of scrutiny, and that makes you, I don't know.
I'm going to try to express how I think that is helpful. And it could be harmful to some mm-hmm. degree, but there is a way in which I think that has helped me. I'll try to express that. These are all really, really good thoughts. And as you're listening to it again, the idea is, we'll kind of run back here once more. The idea is to hopefully to help to increase this desire. One thing I was pondering this morning is we've got 10 elders here, and so as opposed to years past in this congregation, there's not quite the sense of urgency that there once was. We really need more elders. I think it would be useful to have more, but there's not that same sense of, oh, wow, just what are we going to do? You've got to have more. But what that could say to men that are here and not serving is, I don't really need to be as concerned about growing, becoming an elder, thinking about that, as I might have if I were here 10 or 15 years ago in the same condition I'm in now. But I do want to be careful about that. A lot of you are pretty young that are in this group here. And you don't know where you're going to live, where you're going to be, and you may not always be in a congregation that has 10 elders and perhaps some others who are not far from being ready to serve in that capacity. The other thing that you don't really know here is if we carry out the vision that we've tried to say that we hope will happen, we finally get Jason to get that building built over there up on the hill, and maybe we are even a group of 600 or 650 or so, we begin to get a little bit crowded, the time will come a group's going to spin off from here. I mean, it's just if things go as we have prayed and wish that they were. When it does, that group has to decide who will serve as elders. You know, I don't see any New Testament pattern for appointing a group of elders beforehand that we would like say, okay, well, we're going to split it up. You know, these six elders will stay here and these four will go over and say, that doesn't work that way. But what that means is that you may find yourself, even here in Atlanta, without moving or anything else, part of a newer group in which there is a need for elders. You got to be ready. And I hope that there is some desire to do that. And then we just don't, you know, time goes on. And things change. And while there may be 10, that number could quickly go down to a much smaller number, create other needs. A lot of reasons why you should be thinking about desiring that work. Okay. So here's some, you mentioned the prayers. A couple other thoughts. I think it's been a real blessing to be able to meet. Maybe I need to be careful about every new member, almost every new member. For a long time when there was only four or five of us, it would be very rare in which someone would place membership that we wouldn't figure out a way to have them meet with all of the elders. With 10 now, so that's a little problematic. And so I can think of some folks who have placed membership in which I wasn't part of that group. But generally speaking, you get to be part of it. Why do you think that's an advantage? What's useful about being in that meeting when somebody places membership?
We learn some important things about them, both outwardly and inwardly, I think.
I mean, just start a relationship off right away. I mean, don't y'all sometimes feel like, oh man, I think they've been members now for 2 years. I can't remember the name of their kids, or I don't remember where they're from. Well, you know, all that stuff, it's hard for me to remember necessarily all of it, but I have it all written down somewhere. I was there. I heard some things. I got an opportunity. And we will tell you, sometimes these are some of the best meetings ever. I mean, some of the conversion stories that people have are just so uplifting. And to be able to hear that from everyone, I think that's a blessing. This is a little bit back to trying to feed off somewhat of what Santi was talking about. So you're part of, you're being a scrutinizer as fresher, but I think there's a difference. As an elder, there's kind of this constant awareness of God and of His work. And what happens to me is that I easily forget about this. You get to the job, you get busy, you know, everything's going along, and it's like, church life, spiritual life, and you understand you can't slice up the pie, as Marty likes to say. It's all about serving God. But sometimes it does feel like a little pie, right? I'm in the slice of the pie that's my work life and stuff, and I'm not thinking much about the Lord. And then you do get those calls at 1 o'clock, or you get this text message. You get, so there's like this constant, somebody's pressing and asking, and suddenly you're, oh, yeah. That you can't complain about that. That's a blessing. That's a reminder. Hey, this is the most important thing. I need to remember these things about God. I think it's strengthened our marriage. Now, it's hard to know this for sure because, you know, you only get to go down one path a lot. It's not like I'm living two parallel lives, one in which I'm an elder and one in which I'm not. And I know the elder one, that path, it's a stronger marriage than the other. But here's my premise. You know, we're at a stage of life where a lot of our activities and things and conversations could be just really unimportant stuff. And yet, the two of us have had to talk about members' troubles, difficulties, situations, what can we do, how can we help, and the fact that we're talking about it and sharing in it and working together in it, I can't help but think that that's kind of made us closer, and not just closer, but the joint work and with things that are important. That's good. That's help. And then the work with other elders. I'll mention that. I counted up. I think I have served with 13 different men as elders, and that's just such a blessing. You know, getting to be an elder with Sewell. You can imagine what that was like. I don't want to say too much about serving with Marty, but that was more like a mentor relationship, especially early on, and all. And that was wonderful. And if any of you knew Paul Griffin back in the day, and then these men now, you know, just when we have something, even if it's something difficult to deal with, you know, that commonality, that working together, it is a good thing, and it has been an edifying process to do. So there's a lot of blessings. You know.
I think the way I would summarize that is you're getting vast experience in a lot of different things that you probably would not otherwise have done. You know, I think sometimes the elders are looked at as being, you know, infallible or having some level of you're above it all, and maybe you've had a life that doesn't have a lot of challenges, but then when you're dealing with a lot of different issues with the members, you get a new perspective. So it's not only experience, but it's perspective on things, and then that builds on itself, and then that's education for you, and that you can then pass along to others to assist in the ultimate goal of getting everyone to heaven. So I think all of those things combined is just what's very fulfilling in acting in that capacity. And then you don't really feel like it's you. It's feel like you're kind of a vessel that's a conduit to this. And you're just helping this along. Yeah. You don't feel like it's you.
That's really well put. It reminds me of some of those comments at the beginning of James, right, about how we're changed by the stresses and adversity and things, but some of those challenges they work to make us into somebody better if we'll accept that. Okay, so we were talking the other night about working with the other elders. The second question that's about to come up we actually covered. We didn't so much cover some of these, but I'm interested in your thoughts. Do you think that every decision of the elders needs to be unanimous? And what biblical principles would be applied in making a decision where there's a difference of opinion? A couple of times when we've gone out and taught some of this material in other places, if they don't have elders, one of the questions, if we do a Q&A or whatever it comes up, is what do you do when all the elders don't agree on something? And I think it's a legitimate fear, right, that could create some disunity in a church. But let's think about this first part. Do the decisions need to be unanimous? How do we go about it if we don't all agree? How do we go about making them? Yes,
I would say that there probably needs to be a united plan. You know, whatever is going to be done about a certain situation, but not all of them may necessarily think that is the best way, but they may still unite in the decision of what they're going to do.
Okay, so you're saying we don't all think exactly the same? Is that
yes.
You think it's a good thing, maybe, that elders don't all have exactly the same thought about, hey, here's the way we should approach this.
Yeah. That's the strength of the eldership.
And I suspect that it's a part of God's plan of having multiple elders, which is certainly the New Testament pattern, is that you end up with some different thoughts, different degrees of wisdom, but if it's a hard decision, having some different ideas to start with is important. But Jason didn't leave it there. He pointed out they don't all think alike, but when you were finished, you kind of had us all on the same page, right? Even though we may not think it's the best decision, we're all united behind it.
You're all united about what you're actually going to go and do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Plan of action or whatever.
Why would that be important? If it's of any substance, of any importance whatsoever, you understand that it really probably doesn't matter about whether this carpet is basically, it's mostly blue, of course it's not one color. Yeah, exactly. Whether we really, truly got all united behind the color of the carpet, but if it's of any substance whatsoever, right? Why is that important?
Well, it could lead to division.
It could. Half
the eldership says is going to go and do this, and the other half says, no, we don't think that's right. We're going to go do something different. I mean,
Sewell told us for a long time that one of the quickest ways to split a church is to let it be known that the elders are not united behind something that we're doing and that we're in different camps. I think it's important for you to know we make decisions and we come at it from different angles and different thoughts and different degrees of believing this is the best plan or not. But if we don't leave with one united, we're all behind whatever it is we've decided to do, then we have left it open for some of you to say, well, I didn't like that plan, and these two elders are against it too. And so you can see where all that looks like.
So the sub-question is, could it be known that the elders didn't agree, at least at first, in the decision process? And I think the answer is maybe yes, and maybe it's important. Peter says, not lording over the flock, but being an example. The elders are an example of deference and humility. And I think not self-willed comes to mind, you know, as a qualification. So I think maybe there's an opportunity, I'm saying this softly, but for the elders to be an example of how Christians should get along when they differ. And if anybody in the church should be equipped to do that, y'all can do those things. So I know that y'all, it was fairly clear that everybody didn't agree on every kind of decision that you made.
Right.
In retrospect, it feels like those were less significant, but still it was helpful to know that there was a variety of opinion and deliberation and accommodation, and y'all still loved each other after the announcement was made, and everybody supported the decision as if it were his own.
Because those different thoughts are still going to exist out among the church as a whole, and if they feel like
expect
that,
them
to unite behind one idea,
right.
but at the same time, if they know that whatever was what they felt like should have gotten more attention or whatever did get attention, that's important. I think that's a valuable thing. So, but what are some of the principles in applying to make a decision where maybe we don't start off on the same page? And I have an answer when people have said, well, what do you do when all the elders don't agree? And they're fearful of it. I have an answer to try to reduce the fear. I'll share it with you in a minute. But what do you think are some principles here? Go ahead.
Just going through the case studies that we've done, so many of them, there are so many different avenues you could go, maybe even like a stepwise situation. All right, can we all agree? Let's do this as step one. Let's see how that goes. You know, almost playing off, if the conversation one-to-one goes a certain direction, you know.
See where some of the consequences of these things are.
So, you know,
share those together, understand that. What else? Yeah, Ryan, you?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ryan.
So, I don't know if Acts 15 is a great place to go to discuss it, but it seems like there was some question at the beginning and everybody wasn't necessarily on the same page to begin.
Right.
But they utilized the scriptures in order to do that, and they spoke with clarity about the options that were there, and they came to a pretty immediate decision about this is what God wants for us. But, and they may not all be as cut and dry as that, I understand, but they used God's word and Christ's example in order to determine that.
Yeah, so I was going to jump in and say that the answer I've often given is, think about a situation in which you have a group of men who, number one, are humble. Because you can't be self-willed, as you pointed out. So if the men truly have that attitude of a willingness to think of the interest of others but instead of their own, they're willing to give in and all. But at the same time, have that ability to, how does it say it? you know, challenge the gainsayer, you know, the Titus 1.
Convict the gainsayer.
Convict the gainsayer. So you really, you have this ability to know the scriptures well enough to know what's right or wrong. Okay, well now you got a group of men who know how to open up their Bibles to actually articulate what is God saying here, but they're willing to listen to one another's thoughts about what the scriptures are saying, what, how to apply some of the principles, because it isn't sometimes as black and white as that, but maybe more of how would this principle play out in this circumstance. If you get men who are skillful in the word and humble at the same time, you'll go a long way toward building toward one common viewpoint of what we should do. So that's important.
Hey, you've already touched on it, but the passage, Philippians 2:3, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves.
Exactly. What are some other passages that come to mind? As there are differences of opinion, but we've got to go down one common path. What are some others? Do you think of them?
In honor of preferring one another, which I think means
love binding together in perfect harmony.
Okay. Yeah, so here's that desire for that harmony, that unity. I think about Romans 14 and 15, you know, the weak brother, the strong brother. So here's some circumstances in which you may have a set of choices that are all scriptural. They're not wrong, but which ones are really going to edify the most? And with this idea of being concerned especially about the weak, whatever path we take, what's going to be the effect on those who maybe don't fully understand all of this? Those kinds of things are really important to have brought into the discussion.
So one, a couple other things, just mechanics of it. You know, when you have a disagreement, so like an important thing you mentioned earlier, I think, is how strongly do you feel about it?
Yeah.
You know, everyone should be heard, but then maybe another meta information is, and is that a big deal for you or is it not? And one form of that is this a matter of conscience, meaning interpretation of Scripture, this is going to hurt my conscience if we go in this path. You need to know that pretty soon up front and then begin to work on an accommodation where no one's conscience is violated. There are some boundaries there that you know, you can keep giving in, and probably should, but there's a place where that stops.
Hey, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I mean that came up quite a bit in COVID and one other matter too, where we had to kind of ask, you know, is this truly what you're saying? Is this a matter of conscience? It's right or wrong, not just either a preference or what might be most edifying or not.
Pleasing God.
This is, yeah, exactly. And we do not want to go down a path on the other. All right, this is good. We talked some about this, some of the advantages and disadvantages for not necessarily including all of the elders in one of those kind of sheep situations, somebody's troubled. You can think about, we talked a lot about some of the advantages. Reputations aren't harmed. There are just a number of things. When things work out well, there's a lot of advantages. But one disadvantage we did talk about before is if you begin to get into those areas where you might be, as an elder, providing instructions that you've taken a position on what the scriptures teach and you have a different idea than what the other elders do, that could end up being a real serious problem. So there needs to be some sound judgment about if you're possibly doing that or not. And then at that point, if there's any question, I think you've got to share and
or at least say, here's what I'm thinking about this. Could we talk about this particular scriptural principle?
Which, without necessarily bringing in the name. That's true. That's true.
Yeah. Russ, I have one question about that. Is there ever a time where you say, I think it would be intimidating for this person to have, in particular, 10 elders and sit down with them?
Oh, totally.
One or two.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between, I need to tell all the other elders about this. But, I mean, there's no way to move forward in some of the kinds of situations we've talked about and try to do it in meetings with 10 elders. I mean, you know, we're still, I'll just kind of share this. I think we're still kind of figuring out some of that. We've had a couple of meetings that I thought, man, there's way more of us in this room that need to be in here for this. And And yeah, you have to think about that intimidation.
Russ, just a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Josh.
Is there not an inherent challenge? I know you have to use good judgment with how many elders will be involved, but it would scare me to death if somebody came up and asked me about a situation in church, and I'm thinking, I'm an elder, and I don't know what you're talking about, but other elders do. Has that become an issue? I'm just asking. I don't know.
Well, so here's part of the kind of the agreement when we're in these kinds of situations is if it's something that is becoming publicly known, it's spreading out, that so that there's a high likelihood of that circumstance kind of happening, we really need to tell everybody. You need to know so you're not caught in that regard. And I'm sure there's kind of a lead-in up to that. Somebody may ask you about something, and you can just simply say, hey, I know somebody else is taking care of that, but you don't necessarily know.
Russ, are you saying that in that example number two with an individual Christian or maybe a couple?
Yeah.
But not saying that would apply to flock type questions?
Yeah, I don't see this related to flock. I think, if we're making a decision on behalf of the flock as a whole, other than, it kind of leads into this third question.
Okay.
Just that from a practical standpoint, do you think an elder ever makes a decision without consulting all the other elders? And this is the practical side of this. So Daniel comes up and says, hey, so-and-so is not here to lead a prayer this morning. We've got so-and-so's visiting here, and I really want to ask him to lead a prayer. You got 2 minutes to decide, right? You're going to go track down the other 9 elders and make sure that hey, this is okay. Now, if you had even the slightest doubt about it, what you need to do, of course, is just either say no or some. But there are some decisions on the fly like that you just kind of have to. But to Brett's point, if it's really something affecting the flock, then I think you got to involve everybody. But
for
there
sure,
are moments
for sure
of time.
Backfill the information.
Yeah.
In other words, say, hey, I did this. If there's a problem, you figure out to reverse it.
But we understand that. Sometimes from a private, you can't go drag everybody else in. Something needs to be determined that very moment. And I think there's an expectation you have enough sound judgment to do that and to know when you can and when you shouldn't. But it's pretty rare. All right, any other thoughts? And we'll move on to a different topic. Okay. And by the way, again, one of the reasons for sharing some of this is so you have a better sense of what's going on here. You can either sympathize or maybe help sharpen the current elders. If there's something in some of the discussion, well, I'm not sure. You guys should really think about this or whatever. It's good for us.
I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to the advantages and challenges that have come up as you've worked with different sizes of eldership, as the eldership has gone from, I don't know how many you had when you started, but we have, 9 now?
10.
Or 10, sorry, 10. So, how has that dynamic affected the work and the decisions as the eldership size has changed?
So, flock decisions and all were a lot easier when there were 3 or 4 elders. Obviously, some of just the ability to get together to spend time and work through those things. I remember our monthly meetings would just sit down and say, hey, when do you guys want to meet? Just kind of think it through, and we'd find the time, and we'd try to meet a couple of times, but it wouldn't be that hard. And then we got to a number where we need to have a set time, and we can change it. We almost always do, but at least we start from some expectation. That was harder. It's just slower, right? It's a slower process when it's a flock shepherding kind of decision to be made. This is from a personal standpoint, having served when there were only 3 or 4, and now with 10, I felt I had to adjust some of the things that I did. I felt like my voice was more important. I don't mean this in a bad way. I mean, it had to be. Right, when you're 1 of 4 and you feel strongly about how something should be done, then that's probably the way it's going to happen. And when you're in a group of 10 and you feel pretty strongly, I think this is the way we should do this, there's a really good chance that's not the way that it's going to happen. That's okay. It's okay. There's more voices. There's more wisdom. There's more sharing. But kind of learning to back off. The other way is, I think when there's three or four, you feel like, you just feel a lot more responsibility. I better have an idea of what we should do. And sometimes now with 10, it's like, oh, I don't need to worry about that.
Somebody will think it's right.
Surely somebody's got an idea. And so, it's easy to feel a little bit less responsible than we did before. Those are just some things kind of going through that. Now, for some, Anthony's not here this morning, but, I mean, he's only got this one experience, right? He doesn't know what it was like being an elder with four. He just knows the other one. I'll come back for it, you know.
I don't know if this is the best time to ask this question, but I know you guys also, like, Marty and Sewell were elders, have a lot of wisdom, and you still go to them in certain ways. Can you speak to that?
Like, sure.
Where that comes in and how that works?
Well, you can think of one. Obviously, some of you that are deacons know that we have the elders and deacons meeting every third Sunday of the month, but it's really the elders and deacons and former elders and evangelists, because we want them there, because that's an opportunity where something may come up. It would be good for them to know about some of that. And then we've struggled through some issues over time where we felt like those men had special experience, and we drag them back in to be part of those discussions. And we even asked Marty to act as if he were a consultant when we went from four elders to eight. You know, give us some ideas of how it would be to work together as eight elders. And so we had an all-day session, and he kind of helped pull together some things, trying to lean on some of that. It is very beneficial, obviously, to have it, right?
I was just curious, is it your experience with this group now where, so you just mentioned Anthony, he's a new member of the eldership, is there a natural deference to those that have been there before, and, you know, it's got to take some time before that new elder or elders that have joined to really have a voice in decision making, or is there a dynamic, and I think it's probably depends on the eldership and the congregation you're in, and the personalities involved.
I think a lot of it depends on the man, you know, because I can think of some who were much quicker to express and be open about it, and others kind of held back. Back to a point that's been made before, if we're having a bigger discussion, we should be asking, you know, if you've gone through a long discussion and you realize, hey, those two guys have not said one word, I have no idea what they're really thinking. So you got to kind of press and get them to say those things. But I think it's more about the man. I think we have tried very hard to make sure that there's an understanding. There aren't junior elders. There aren't this, you know, that their thoughts are just as important as the others. And that's why some of these men have sort of in leading some of our meetings and things early on, kind of throw them in, you know, let them take the lead in our discussion, because somebody always has to lead a meeting.
Have you explained Elder of the Month?
Yeah, have I explained Elder of the Month? Y'all know?
Those are the parking space out there.
The Elder of the Month parking space is up there at the sweat clinic. Now, we went to an Elder of the Month, I don't know, probably even we only had like four elders or so, because we'd go into a meeting, you'd meet with some family about something important. Who's going to start? Who's got a thought?
You know, I did the last one.
It wasn't working. You needed somebody who was responsible for getting it going. What are we going to do? Or when we met as a group for that month and the things we needed to go through, who's going to kind of like lead that, get that going and be organized and ready and thinking it through? And then who's going to close out a service if we want that to be done? So we started doing an Elder of the Month, which meant that if you're the Elder of the Month and we have a meeting, we're going to meet with a family to place membership, you're the one that's going to run that meeting. Ask them the questions and things on behalf of everybody else. And we like to explain what it is, because it is a little odd. You go in there and you're like, isn't that one guy, Russ, he won't shut up? Ask every question, he really got just kind of sat there. But that is kind of the point of that, that there's no vacuum in a discussion and stuff, that somebody's got some responsibilities.
And if you didn't do that, there might be a difference of a single person continually, and that could be an issue.
Right? You know, that's a good point, because that would happen. And again, it's personalities, right? It's who's kind of got that willingness to jump in and say things. And we'll talk about being self-aware on Wednesday night. I think it's something you need to be self-aware. And I've come to realize, like, for myself, I am too confident about some things. Like, you got a problem? I got an answer. When the dinner comes and asks me this question, it's a family question about somebody's health. It wasn't a spiritual thing, it was more health kind of stuff. And Kay and I are in there talking to the two of them. And I'm kidding, I think you ought to think about this. I do this. You don't know anything about any of that stuff. What are you giving them advice for? And so you need to kind of realize, my ideas may not be that good, but I always think I got one. And you're kind of getting it out. Whereas for all of his skills, he's self-aware, but I'm aware too. Marty's way too hesitant about things that he really is the expert in. And he'll hold back and worry about whether you need to know those things, because otherwise you'll end up with something like that. That's good. And you learn that over time working with the other elders. So we're talking about new members and all. This is important. Somebody comes, they want to be part of the group. You're going to take on that Hebrews 13 kind of responsibility for them.
I did my job.
Yeah, okay. So maybe we'll talk about this at some point. You'll just have to be... I want to be real sure you understand one thing about this lesson sheet. Do the lesson. It's only one lesson. There's a couple of case studies, but I'm not asking you for much more than just give them some advice and all. But I would like you to do this. There's a form at the back, and I'd like you to fill it out for yourself. Kind of rank yourself. And this is like a test. We're actually going to do this. You're going to try to split up into some smaller groups eventually and let you assess one another. On a confidential basis, you won't be, when I say split up, it's like I may give you several names that you can assess, but nobody will ever know what you did. But if you'll do this thing one time, you'll kind of create your own scoring mechanism. So it's 1 to 10, and what you think is a 10 is probably totally different than somebody else. It's okay. That just helps to go through some of that. But the idea, look at the bottom, what you're really doing is not necessarily assessing yourself or how well you know yourself. It's what you think the congregation would say about you. Now, that's a sidestep there, and you have to think it through a little bit more. You may not really know, but what would others say about you? So if Mike were filling this out, it's not what Mike knows about himself. It's what does he think others here perceive him in regard to his spiritual interests, in regard to his Bible wisdom. And so you may, as you do a self-assessment, you may recognize the fact that, I'm not sure people here have any idea of how much I know about the Scriptures, because I don't really teach or do some things. So you might actually rank yourself relatively low, even though your true Bible wisdom is much higher. You see the difference in that. So, but that self-assessment is just kind of a get acquainted with this, because you'll come in on Wednesday and probably have some questions for us. I don't understand this. What does this chart necessarily mean? The other thing is, once you've gone through it, I think I'm going to change it up a little bit. We've talked some about some things that, as we've gone through this class, it might be useful to kind of work into that. So that's what I want you to do for Wednesday night. Now, the idea is that we're trying to get a sense of where are we. Where are we in terms of our spiritual strength, our wisdom, our skills, and other things that you might need if you were to ever serve as an elder? And then, in the two classes after that, we'll focus on actually thinking about those things that help a man to develop. Things like your work within your family, working through doctrinal questions, and study of the Scriptures and all. We'll talk about those things more. All right, we got a minute or two. What information? What would you like to know about somebody in your close membership? They come here.
How they became a Christian.
How did they become a Christian? Why do you want to know that? Which is kind of leading into this part here.
Making sure it follows the pattern of the scripture.
Yeah, you know, you would think everybody who says, I'd like to be a member, is definitely somebody who has believed Jesus was the Son of God and was baptized for the forgiveness of their sins and repented and all of those kinds of things. Truth of the matter is, we've had some people come, and if you ask them, well, how did you come to know Christ? How did you come to be a Christian? It doesn't sound like anything taught in the New Testament at all. And so what would you want to do at that point? Wouldn't you want to teach them?
Arrange for a sermon on baptism.
Yeah. That's right. That's always an option. Right? Because we know they will be there. That, oh, no. No, I mean, it's just a different type of discussion. It needs to be done maybe right away to begin to think that part through. So that's one. What else would you like to know? You're still kind of...
Ask if they've been members elsewhere before, and maybe why they left.
Yeah, it's been, and you oftentimes know why somebody came to Atlanta or not. But we've had people who live right here in Atlanta, been in Atlanta for a long time, been members for 20 years at so-and-so congregation, and now they're suddenly here. Well, why? What's happened in that? Yeah, Jason, your comment, then we'll just have to stop. And y'all never know what we do with these.
I was just going to say, why do they want to be a member?
Yeah, why? Yeah, why here?
Especially if they came from out of town, they made a choice. Why did you?
What did you see here? What can we learn? Oftentimes, you know, that we would not otherwise. All right. Well, we'll keep on rolling. So, thank you.